Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Chaf Chet. Today's daf has been sponsored again by Katz Judaica on King's Highway and East 7th, the former Sisu. Please support all our sponsors, the School of Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied, Le'ilu Nishmat, Hacham Baruch, Rafael ben Miriam, and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem, Tanihem began Eden. Amen.
Amen.
We are starting on the top line on Kuf Chaf Het. We learned in our Mishnah that for the purpose of guests and Bitul Torah, or to set up the Bet Midrash, one is allowed on Shabbat to move boxes, so long as the goods in the boxes are not mukseh. However, if the goods are mukseh, one would not be able to clear away the kupot. So one of the examples the Mishnah gave was tevil, which means tevil is goods, produce, that the Terumot and the Ma'asrot were not given yet. So the Mishnah clearly says you can't move Tevil because it's Mukseh. The Gemara asks on this, Aval lo et ha-Tevil Peshita. Of course, that's Pashut. Of course, Tevil is unedible because she didn't give the Terumot and Ma'asrot, and therefore certainly it's Mukseh. What is the Mishnah teaching us? Lo tziricha betevil tabul midrabbanan. We're talking about over here a case where mideoraita from the Torah, it's not tebel. It's only tebel from the rabbis. What's the case? Kegon shezaro be'atzitz she'eno nakuv. For example, let's say somebody grew a fruit in a pot that does not have a hole on the bottom. Now, although it grows in the dirt, but since it's not from the ground, from the Torah, you're not chayav terumot and ma'asrot. And therefore, from the Torah, if you didn't give the terumot and ma'asrot, it's not considered tevil. The rabbis came along and said, midrabbanan, you have to give terumot and ma'asrot, and therefore, if you don't, it's tevil midrabbanan. So the chidush is that even this item that was planted in an atzitz, in a flower pot, she'eno nakuv, is considered tevil, and it's going to be mukseh, and therefore you cannot move those goods on Shabbat. Gemara continues, ve'lo ma'aseh rishon she'lo netela terumato, which we understood this Mishnah, the Levi gets his ma'aseh rishon, that's 10%. He has to give 10% of that to the Kohen. That's called terumat ma'aser, or ma'aser mina ma'aser. So the Mishnah said that if the Levi gets his ma'aser and he did not give the additional 10% to the Kohen, so those goods are mukseh. Again, the Gemara says, peshita. That's obvious. Of course, what's the question? So the Gemara says, lo tziricha shikdimo bikri. Now, we're talking about a case where the fellow over here, the Levi, he went and he took his entitlement, meaning his 10%, he went on his own, and he took it after the Yisrael made miruach hakri, meaning after he piled his wheat, the Levi came along and took his ma'asir. Now, we learned on yesterday's daf that once the Yisrael piles his wheat, there's already a chiyuv to give terumah to the Kohen. This Levi went after there was a chiyuv already of terumah. We call that terumah gedolah. That's the terumah you have to give the Kohen. So he went from the pile and he took his 10%. Shenatal mimenu ma'aser velo natla mimenu terumah gedolah. But he did not give from that the terumah that belongs to the Kohen. Because you have to keep in mind now, that 10% that he took in there, there's a portion that belongs to the Kohen, meaning a portion of terumah. 2% of those goods belongs to the Kohen. And since he took it at a time where the chayuv of terumah is on, so he's obligated to give him. So long as he doesn't give that terumah, these goods over here are unedible, and therefore they are mukseh. So what's the chidush of the Mishnah? Ma'u detema kedama lirapapa la'abaye. We would have thought, like we learned yesterday, what Rav Papa told Abaye. If you remember yesterday's daf, Rav Papa told Abaye, who told you when the Hayyub of Terumah hits? Which means, one Pasuk told us that the Levi has to give Terumah. One Pasuk told us he doesn't give Terumah. So Rav Papa told us, maybe to reconcile the Pisukim, maybe the Hayyub of Terumah comes only when they are in the stalks, when they're still in the field. Maybe that's when the Hayyub of Terumah comes. Who told you that the Hayyub of Terumah comes when it's in the piles? So you might have thought, like what Rav Papa told Abaye, and therefore what? That there's no Hayyub of Terumah when the piles are made already. Kamash malan kedishani le'abaye. Hadush in the Mishnah is like Abaye answered him, that no, it makes sense that the Hayyub of Terumah only applies when? Once you piled it. Why? Because once you pile it, it's called Dagan. And the Torah says you give Terumah on Dagan. Dagan means processed wheat. It's not considered processed until you cut it, you pile it, you smoothen out the pile. So therefore, we go back to our Mishnah. And our Mishnah said the Maaser Rishon of the Levi, that he didn't give Terumah, it means where he took it after the Hayyub of Terumah was on him, meaning when it was in the piles. He took his Maaser Rishon, but he did not give the Terumah Gedolah, and therefore the items are Mukseh. We continue, Velot Maaser Sheni. We learned in the Mishnah, and not Maaser Sheni that was not redeemed. Maaser Sheni is an additional 10% that the Yisrael has to take to Jerusalem and eat. He cannot eat these goods outside Yerushalayim until he redeems it. So it's obvious, Maaser Sheni Shelo Nivdu is going to be Mukseh, because he cannot eat it outside of Jerusalem. So the Gemara says, Peshita, Lo Nitzrecha Dinivdu Velo Nivdu Kehilchatan. We're talking about where he redeemed the Maaser Sheni. However, he didn't redeem it according to the halakha. Ma'aser shepeda'o al gabe asimon. For example, he redeemed it on a coin. But what type of coin? A coin that's called an asimon. That would be like a slug. The Torah tells us that the only type of coin that you could use to transfer the kedusha of the ma'aser sheni is a coin that has a picture on it. And as Simon does not have a picture on it, the Rahmana Amar Vitsarta HaKesef Biyadecha. The Torah says regarding Maaseh that you should collect the money and take it in your hand and bring it to Jerusalem. But from the word Vitsarta, Davar Sheyesh Bo Tzura. Hakamim learned from there only a coin that has a tzura, a picture on it. And therefore, since the as Simon does not have a picture on it, the Pidyon is not valid, and since the Pidyon is invalid, so the Maaser still retains its Kedusha, and since he's outside of Yerushalayim, so these items are going to be Mukseh. Now the next case of the Mishnah was Hekdesh. If you have something that was consecrated property, for example, you made something Kodesh for the Beit HaMikdash. So we said, if you didn't redeem it, so that item is Mukseh. Obviously, because you cannot use that item. It's consecrated to the Beit HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, what's the chidush in that case? Hekdesh shehlelo al gabe karka. Which means, we're talking about where you redeemed the Hekdesh. However, you redeemed it the wrong way. You transferred the Kedusha of the Kodesh on real estate. Now that is an invalid pidyon for things that are Kodesh. Why? The Rahmana Amar, Venatan hakesef vekamno. The pasuk writes that you redeem it on money, vekamno, and then you're able to use the kodesh. So therefore, the only way to redeem hekdesh is by transferring it to the kesef. This guy in the Mishnah redeemed his kodesh on karka. So therefore, since that's an invalid redemption, so the Kodesh retains its status, and therefore it's going to be Mukseh. We continue, the Mishnah said, Velo et haluf. Luf, we said, was a type of bean that is really unedible. So now, therefore, it is mukseh. Tanu Rabbanan, the Braita says, metaltelin et hasav. It is permissible on Shabbat to move the type of herb that's called hasav. It's a type of grass, actually, Rashi tells us, that grows its roots directly straight in the ground. Its roots do not spread out. Hakamim tell us it was that herb that Yehoshua ben Nun used when he needed to border off the land for each of the tribes. So therefore he used this type of herb that grows directly in the ground as a natural border for the Shevatim. In any event, these items are not mukseh. Why? Because it's edible for deers. And therefore, since it's edible for animals, it's non-mukseh. One is allowed to move the mustard seed on Shabbat, it is also not mukseh. Because it's edible for the doves. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, af metaltelin shivre zechochit. It's even permissible to move on Shabbat broken pieces of glass. Why? Because the ostriches eat broken glass, and therefore it's considered food for them, and therefore it's not mukseh. Amale Rabbi Natan. So Rabbi Natan tells Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, Ela me'ata, according to what you're saying, habile zemurot, bundles of, let's say, twigs of wood, yitaltelenu, it should also be non-mukseh. Why? Mipeneshu ma'achal lepilin, because it's edible for elephants. I mean, just like you're telling me that broken glass is edible for ostriches, therefore it's not mukseh. So therefore, the twigs that are in bundles should also not be mukseh, because you could feed them to the elephants. So what does he answer back? He says, ostriches are prevalent. Pilin lo shkiche. But elephants are not prevalent. Now we're going to see exactly the nature of this machloket and what Rashbag was actually saying. Amar Amemor, Amemor comes to explain this machloket. And he says, Vehu de'itle na'amiyot. He comes along and says that when Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said that the broken glass is non-mukseh, it's talking about to a guy that has an ostrich, which means he has a pet ostrich. Then we say, since he has the ostrich, so then already the broken glass is not going to be mukseh. To this, Rav Ashi has a question. Amar Rav Ashi la memor. How could you explain the machloket like that? Ela dekamar Rabbi Natan l'Rashbag. How are you going to explain the give and take that Rabbi Natan had with Rashbag? Why? Habile zemorot yetaltelenu mepnei shumachal lepilin. Right? Rabbi Natan asked Rashbag, oh, according to you, you should be able to move the bundles of wood because they're edible for elephants. Eat lepilin amaylo. If we're talking about a case where the guy has the animal, why should Rashbag say that they're mukseh? Rashbag said, no, lo shkiche. What do you mean? If we're talking about a case where the guy has the animal, just like he has the ostrich, he has the elephant, why should Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel say that the ziborot are going to be mukseh? So therefore, according to Rav Ashi, he says, if you have the animal, then for sure everybody agrees the item is not going to be mukseh. So then what's the subject over here? Ela ra'ui. The subject over here was where he doesn't have an ostrich. But since it's fitting to feed an ostrich somewhere, even though you don't have it, that already makes it non-mukseh. So that's what Rabbi Natan said. Fine, you're going with ra'ui, meaning you don't have to have the actual animal to make it non-mukseh. So good. If a guy doesn't have an elephant, he still be able to move the zemorot. Why? Because bottom line, it's ra'ui. Just like you said, it's befitting to feed an ostrich if you don't have one. So it should be fitting to feed an elephant even if you don't have one. That was Rabbi Natan's claim to Rashbag. And you know what Rashbag answered? Big difference. Ostriches at least are shchiyah, which means you might not have an ostrich yourself, but they're prevalent. The ostrich is around. Therefore, the broken glass is not mukseh. Pilin lo shchiyah, which means, number one, you don't have it, and number two, they're not so prevalent. So therefore, according to the way that Asher learned, you don't have to have the animal, but it's got to be a prevalent animal. It's got to be shchiyah. Whereas according to Amimor, he learned, no, we're talking about where you actually have to have the animal itself. So that's the mahlok between Amimor and Rav Asher. Amimor says you have to have the item. Where Rav Asher says, no, it has to be ra'ui. However, Rashbag says ra'ui and shchiyah. Comes the Gemara and continues, Amar Abaye. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel v'Rabbi Shimon. V'Rabbi Yishmael v'Rabbi Akiva. All these Tanaim, kol lehu svira lehu, kol Yisrael b'nei melachim hem. All these rabbis hold that the Jewish people are considered sons of kings, meaning we're all considered princes. Now, this is not only to make us feel good that the rabbis are saying we're considered like princes, but there's halachic ramifications by considering Am Yisrael princes. And we're going to now prove where all these rabbis made their statements and the halachic ramification. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel had the Amran. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, we said his opinion already. Where did we see his opinion? We actually saw it in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we said that one of the items that were mukseh on Shabbat, we said was the loof. Right? So the Gemara Mishnah then said, no, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel said that you're allowed to move the loof on Shabbat. Why? Because you could feed it to the, he said you could feed it to the Orbin. The Orbin are the ravens. Now, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel holds, even though it wasn't customary for regular people to have ravens, who used to have ravens? Bnei Melachim. The princes used to have ravens. So if the princes have ravens, what is it going to do for the regular Jew? So Rabban Shimon must hold, Kol Yisrael b'nei melachimim. All the Jewish people have the status of princes, and therefore they're all worthy for that status, and therefore any Jew, even if he's not a prince, can move the loof bean on Shabbat, because since it's worthy for princes, because they have ravens, and Kol Yisrael b'nei melachim, so therefore everybody can move the loof. So therefore we see that Rabban Shimon again learns a halakha from this fact, which you can argue and say, no, only for princes. For a regular guy who doesn't have ravens, so could be it's mukseh. Comes the rabbi and says, no, all the Jewish people are worthy to be called princes, and therefore they're included in that group, and therefore it's not going to be mukseh for them. Rabbi Shimon, where do we see Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Ditnam, we learned today Mishnah. Bene melachim sachin al gabe makotehem shemen vered. We learned in a previous Mishnah that the princes of Israel are allowed to anoint themselves on Shabbat, even on their wounds, on their makot, shemen vered. That's the oil of the rose. Now, even though we know that anything that's medicinal is forbidden on Shabbat, so how could it be permissible for a prince to anoint himself, especially on a wound, with shemen vered? So the Mishnah said, Sheken darkam shel bnei melachim lasuch bechol, because it's the way of princes to use this oil all week long, even for not medicinal purposes. So therefore, when you see a prince anointing himself with rose oil, you don't think it's a medicine. It's just his derech. That's the way he does it. Meaning this opinion holds what? Just for princes. However, Rabbi Shimon Omer, on that Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon said, Kol Yisrael b'nei melachimim. He said, no, all Jews have the status of princes, therefore, every Jew on Shabbat is allowed to use rose oil, because we give the status of b'nei melachim to all the Jewish people. Now we go to the next rabbis. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. How do you know that those two Tanaim hold the same thing that Pnei Yisrael Melachim de Tanya? We have a Braita. Let's say there was a person that they were noshe. They were claiming against him 1,000 maneh. Meaning he owed creditors 1,000 maneh. Velavush itstela. And the fellow was wearing, let's say, an itstela, a robe, bat kuf maneh. A very, very expensive robe that's worth 100 maneh. So now they want to take that itstela as a down payment. After all, he owes 1,000. So are they allowed to take his robe off him? So the Gemara says, Mafshitin oto. Yes, they can take his robe that's worth 100. Umalbishin oto itstela hare'uyalo. And instead, you can't leave him without a shirt. They could exchange it for a cheaper itstela. After all, 100 maneh itstela is only worn by noblemen and princes. So this guy over here, he's not a prince. So he's wearing something that's very hashuv. Therefore the Gemara says, take it off his back and replace it with a cheaper one. Tana mishum Rabbi Ishmael v'tana mishum Rabbi Akiva. But on this statement, the Tanaim Rabbi Ishmael Rabbi Akiva said, Kol Yisrael re'uyim le'ota itstela. All the Jewish people are princes. And therefore, even if a regular guy is wearing a itstela that's worth 100 maneh, it's befitting to him. And therefore, you can't take it. When could you take it? Only if it, let's say, wasn't worthy for him. So take the expensive one and replace it for a cheaper one. They say no. Every Jew, no matter what level he's on, is ra'oi to wear the 100 maneh itstela, and therefore you cannot take it. So we've proven all these tana'im hold the sevara that the Jewish people have a status of bnei melachim. Comes the Gemara and continues. Tanu rabbanan, chabile kash. That's bundles of
cash.
Straw. The chabile etzim and bundles of wood. The chabile zeradim. That's bundles of reeds. Imit kinan lemachal behema. If you prepare them for before Shabbat in order to feed to your animals, metaltelin otan, then of course they become non-muvsim, meaning you designate them before Shabbat for animal food. Deim lav, but if you didn't, emetaltelin otan. Why? Because these things normally stand for fuel, and therefore items that stand for fuel are obviously muvsim. Rabban Shimon Megamliel Omer. Havilin and italin biyad echad mutar letaltelan. B'shtei yadayim asu letaltelan. Rashbai comes along and says, even if it stands for food, if you could lift them with one hand, the bundle is light. You could lift the bundle with one hand, it's non-mukseh. Because it's not so burdensome. However, if it's a heavy bundle, the only way you could lift it up is with two hands, it's mukseh. Why? Because of the burden. Hakamim don't want you to exert yourself extra on Shabbat. So that's Rabban Shimon Gamliel's chiddush, that it makes a difference how heavy the bundle is. Comes the Gemara continues. Havile se'ah. Bundles of se'ah. We will see in the Gemara what exactly Se'ah is. Ezov, or bundles of Ezov, the Koranit, or Koranit. These are three different type of herbs. Bundles of these items, Hichnisam le'etzim, and mistapek mehem b'shabbat. Again, if you brought them in order to use them as fuel, obviously they're going to be mukseh on Shabbat. Le'machal behema. But if you brought them in to feed the animals, mistapek mehem shabbat, and you could use them. Now we discuss, are you allowed, let's say, to break them? Which means, they're herbs, so you want to rip them. So the Mishnah says, vekotem beyad veochel, which means it is permissible on Shabbat to break them. Already they're out of the ground already. So therefore, you kotem, you can cut them on Shabbat, and eat them.
but they don't want you to cut these items with a vessel. Because since that's the normal way that they do it during the week, so they want you to do it a little differently. So if you want to break them, only with your hands. Umolel ve'ochel. And you're allowed to be molel. What does molel mean? You take the herb, let's say, and you're able to, between your fingers, rub them. It seems some of these items are in pods. And therefore, in order to get the, let's say, the bean out of the pod, so you rub it with your finger, and they come out. So that's what it says. That's the way you can eat them. You can be molel on Shabbat between, let's say, your thumb and your forefinger. Ubilvad shelo yimlol bichli harbeh. So long as you don't do it with a vessel a lot of the time. Which means they only let you do it with your fingers, not with a vessel. Why? Because that's the way they did it during the week. So they don't want you to do a weekday item. Vachamim omrim. Vachamim come along and say, molel berashetz be'otah ve'ochel. They say, oh, you could molel, you could rub that with the top of your fingers and eat these items. Ubilvad shelol yimlol biyado harbe. But they don't want him to do it with his hands. It seems the rabbis certainly don't allow a keli. But even with your hands, not with the tips of your fingers, even doing it with the rest of your hands, rubbing your hands together to open these items, also not good. Because that's the way you do it during the week. So we have a machlok between the Biyuda and Hakamim. The Biyuda says you can even rub them with your hands, just don't use a keli. Hakamim come along and say, no, you can only use the tips of your fingers, and you cannot use your hands at all, because that's the way they do it during the week. V'chen ba'amita. This also applies to the herb called amita. V'chen befigam. And also with the item that's called figam. Now we have to explain all these items. V'chen b'shar mine tevalin. And for that matter, all herbs and spices have the same law. My amita. Oh, what is this herb called amita? So the Gemara says, ninya. What is ninya? So the Mefashim explained, this is referring to the, that she says, mintai. This is referring to mint. Like in Arabic, they say the na'na. Si'ah. Now we learned earlier that one of the herbs that we're talking about is si'ah. So the Gemara says, what is it? Amar of Yehuda, satre. It is the item that's called satre. That she brings two understandings to this. One, he says in a French word, shadri'a. And in another interpretation, he says it's fuliyul. Fuliyul, we learned, is pennyroyal. So it's a machloka what exactly this herb satre is. Ezov, what is ezov? Abarta. Abarta, we learned, is a hyssop. Koranit, what is koranit? Kornita shema, the name of the herb is kornita. That's what it is, that's its name. Now the only one that we didn't explain so far is the figam. Figam, Rashi tells us, is the herb that's called ruda. So therefore we have all the names. Comes Gemara and says, the ha ha hu de amar lehu. There was a certain merchant that was selling herbs. And he said, man ba'e kornita. He said, who wants to purchase kornita? What was he selling? The ishtekach hasheh. And we saw he was selling an herb called hasheh. Whatever hasheh is. Meaning, Rashi tells us, hasheh is actually shadriya. Now shadriya is the way we interpreted satre. So make up your mind. What is the shadriya? Is it satre or is it kornita? So the Gemara says, Ela si'a satre. We're going to say that the si'a is satre, meaning we'll call that the pennyroyal, let's say. Ezov abarta. Ezov would be the hisab. Kornita hasheh. And the kornita is this item that Rashi calls shadriya. Okay, so therefore we have now vocabulary what all these different herbs and spices are. Comes the Gemara and continues, itmar. We have an Amoraic statement. basar maliach, salted meat, mutar letaltelo b'Shabbat. It is permissible to move it on Shabbat, meaning it is non-mukseh. Basar tafel, however, unsalted meat, we have a machloket. Rav Huna amar mutar letaltelo. Rav Huna says it's not mukseh. Rav Chisda amar asur letaltelo. So when it comes to salted meat, everybody says non-mukseh, no problem, you can move it on Shabbat. However, when it comes to unsalted meat, we have a machloket amongst the Amoraim. So comes the Gemara and says, Rav Huna amar mutar letaltelo. Rav Huna's lenient. He says, even unsalted meat, it's permissible to move on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Veha Rav Huna talmid de Rav Hava. Rav Huna was the student of Rav. Okay, so, well, the Rav kirebi Yehuda svira le de'it le mukseh. And we know that Rav subscribes to the Yehuda's strict opinion of mukseh. And therefore, a non-salted piece of meat, according to the Yehuda, is mukseh, because it is not ra'ui. So therefore, how could Rav Huna say it's non-mukseh? He was a student of Rav. And Rav subscribes to the strict mukseh rule of the Yehuda. Rav Huna, how do you interpret that? So the Gemara says, "B'mukseh la'achila savar like the Yehuda." Yes, Rav holds like the Yehuda. Regarding what? Certain things are mukseh, meaning they're off limits to eat. B'mukseh le'tiltul, but regarding moving those items, sabala k'debi Shimon. Which means, you're right, this piece of meat that's unsalted, it might be forbidden, let's say, to eat it, but we're not discussing eating it. We're discussing over here, moving it. So it seems that over here, that there's a difference between eating a mukseh or moving a mukseh. So Rav says, yes, I took Rav Yehuda's strict opinion in mukseh regarding that you can't eat mukseh. But I didn't take his opinion that you can't move mukseh, and therefore, in certain cases, obviously, and therefore, in this case over here, where Rav Huna says you're allowed to move meat that is unsalted, that could even be going according to his rabbi Rav. Because Rav only took the Yehuda's strict din in mukseh, you can't eat mukseh. But to move mukseh, he took the lenient opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Comes the Gemara and says, Rav Chisda amar asur. Rav Chisda said no. Unsalted meat, asur. Letaltelo. So Gemara says, wait. Veha Rav Yitzhak bar Amir. There was a story with Rav Yitzhak bar Amir. Ikla lebe Rav Chisda. He found himself in the house of Rav Chisda. Vehazahu bar avza. There was a certain duck that was slaughtered already. Tehavu kametaltelule mishimsha letula. They were bringing the duck in from the sun into the shade. There was a duck, it was slaughtered already. The meat was lying out in the sun. So what happened? They were bringing it from the sun into the shade. Ve'amar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda reacted and said, Hisron kiska chazina hacha. He says, yes, it's permissible what you're doing, because it's going to spoil out there in the sun. So it's a good idea you bring in the meat inside. As a matter of fact, it was Rav Chisda that commanded them, bring the duck inside, because it's going to spoil. Now this duck over here wasn't salted. And we just said in Rav Chisda's name, an unsalted piece of meat is mukseh. So how did Rav Chisda say, bring in the duck from the sun into the shade? So the Gemara says, Shani bar avza. A duck is different. Why? Dehazeh le'umsa. Because it's fit for human consumption. For what? Raw meat. You have to remember in the olden days, they used to eat raw meat. Even though it wasn't salted, the halakha says that so long as the blood that's in the piece of meat remains in the meat, it did not come out yet, that blood is not asur. That blood in the meat is called dam ha'evarim shelo pirash.
Therefore, you have a piece of duck meat. It's tender, even if it's raw. The blood that's inside is not asur. So therefore, they used to, in the olden days, take it and eat it as it is. So therefore, Rav Chisda said, non-mukseh, bring it inside, we can eat it. Ah! So what did he talk about when he said regular meat is mukseh? Non-duck meat. Because regular meat is too tough. So therefore, you don't eat it as umsa. And therefore, since it's not fit for human consumption, and obviously he holds also that you're not going to give it to your animals. Since it's fit for human consumption, so you're going to wait till after Shabbat to eat it for yourself. So therefore, Rav Chisda says, meat that is not salted is indeed mukseh. So comes the Gemara and says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Dag maliach, if a person has salted fish, mutar letaltelo, it is permissible to move it on Shabbat, because it is edible. Dag tafel, but unsalted fish, asur letaltelo, then for sure it is forbidden to move it, because as she tells us, Enu ra'oi leklum, fish that's not salted is not worthy for anything. Velekelabim, and to give it to the dogs, lavdatel lemishdeye, he's not going to give it to the dogs either, because he'll wait till after Shabbat to eat it himself. Aval maliach neechal chay al yedei molcho, but salted fish can be eaten by the owner himself. For that matter, we could say that salted meat that we learned it earlier, that's not mukseh, it's because when you salt it, it becomes softer, so therefore it's even fit for human consumption the way it is. Person could eat it raw. When it's not salted, it's tough, and therefore it's not edible, unless we said it would be the meat of the duck, which is tender. In any event, the braita continues, basar, when it comes to meat, ben tafel, ben maliach, mutal etaltelo. This opinion says that when it comes to meat, whether it's salted or not, it is permissible to move it on Shabbat. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Metaltelin et ha'atzamot. Now we discuss bones. What's the status of moving bones on Shabbat? So it says you can move the bones on Shabbat, but neshu ma'achal lekelabim. Because certain bones you can give to feed to your dogs. Now, according to, let's say, the strict opinion in Mukseh, the rabbi that's strict in Mukseh is the Biyuda. So the Tosafot explains here, these bones, if they had meat on them on Shabbat, and now you finished, let's say, eating the chicken, for example. Now already you have bones left over. These bones over here, according to the Biyuda, are going to be Mukseh. Since they went into Shabbat as chicken, now already you finished eating, so these bones retain their status of mukseh. So you have to say, we're talking about me'ereb Shabbat, these bones already without meat on them. And already they were designated for the dogs. And therefore, bones that were already bones without meat from before Shabbat, according to the Biyuda, who strict in mukseh, you're allowed to give them to your dogs. According to the lenient opinion of Mukseh, meaning Rabbi Shimon, I don't care even on Shabbat. After you finished eating the chicken, let's say, and now you have the bones, if the bones are feedable to the dogs, it is non-Mukseh. The Mishnah, the Beraita continues, and we turn to the Amud Bet. Basar Tafuach. What is Basar Tafuach? That she says, spoiled meat. It is non-mukseh as well. Why? Because it is edible to the animals. You can give it to the beasts. And therefore it is non-mukseh. Mayim megulin. Person, let's say, has water that was left uncovered. Now we know in the olden days, water that was left uncovered was dangerous, because you were concerned that maybe a snake came and put its venom in the water. So it says, Mayim Megulin is not Mukse. Why? Because you can give it to the cat. Why? The cat is immune from the poison? That she says yes. Because cats eat snakes. So you see that they're immune to the poison. So therefore, since there's an animal that can drink this water, it's not Mukse. And which animal? The cat. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, kol atzman asur leshotan mepnei asakana. He says, forget about Mukse or not Mukse. You're not allowed to retain these things in your house. Why? Sakana. Dangerous to keep this item around. Somebody might come to drink it. So therefore he says, not only on Shabbat, even during the week, you should not retain this water that was left uncovered, because it can pose a threat of sakana. And we go to the Mishnah. Kofin etasal lefnei ha'efrochim kedei shi'alu v'yirdu. It is permissible on Shabbat to take a sal. What is a sal? A basket. You're able to turn the basket over on Shabbat in order that the chicken can climb up on the basket. Now, what's the hiddush of the Mishnah? The hiddush is like this. Even though a chicken is mukseh, and you might have said that you can't take a non-mukseh item and lift it for a mukseh item, comes the Mishnah and says, no, it is permissible, even though the purpose of your lifting the sal, the non-mukseh item, is in order to serve the mukseh, so the chicken can climb up on it, it is okay. That's the opinion of the Mishnah. Now we learned earlier in the Masechet that there was an opinion of Rav Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak said, no, en kli nital ela letzorech davar hanital, that you can only lift a non-mukseh item for a non-mukseh purpose. Oh, so how does he learn this Mishnah? Rav Yitzchak, who's an Amora, cannot argue on the Mishnah. So he learns the Mishnah in a specific case where you lifted the basket because you needed the place underneath the basket. So at the time that you lifted the basket, it was permissible. Now once you have it in your hand, you can even place it where the chickens are going to climb on it. Meaning you didn't lift it for the chickens. According to them, it's like you lifted it because you needed the space. That's for Eter. Now once you lifted it, so you can even put it in the place where the chickens are going to climb on it. Now you might ask a question. You say, what do you mean? But are you allowed to take something that's non-mukseh and allow mukseh to go on it? We have another principle that we're going to see in a moment that's called mevatel keli mechano. You're not allowed on Shabbat to make a keli that was non-mukseh, mukseh. Now, by having the chicken rest on this keli, the keli or the basket now becomes a basis. Basis becomes a base to mukseh. A base to mukseh is mukseh. So how do you allow a non-mukseh to become a basis? The answer is it's not a basis. Why? Because the chicken doesn't stay on it. The chicken just climbs on it and goes off. And not only that, but to make a basis, it's got to be on it and to stay on it. And the only way to get it off is you have to actually lift it off. But there the chicken goes on its own. And therefore there is no problem of mevatel kli mechano, because the chicken climbs on it temporarily and then jumps off, and therefore we not have a problem of basis. So the Mishnah continues. Tanegolet shebarha. Let's say you have a chicken that escaped. It ran away. Dochin ota achetekanes. You're able to push the chicken until it enters back into its pen. Okay? With your hands. You could push it from behind until you get it in the pen. Medadin agalin usyachin. It is permissible to walk young calves and young donkeys. What does it mean, medadin? So that she tells us, you're actually holding the animal by its neck, right? And on the sides, and you walk it, and the animal moves its feet, so you're able to actually to help the animal along in order to walk it. That's called medadin. Ve'isha medada et bena. For that matter, a lady is allowed to walk a child like that. How? Holds on, let's say, under the arms of the child, and the child moves his legs, and therefore the mother is helping the child walk. That is permissible on Shabbat. We will see exactly in which domain and the circumstances. Now, Amar Rav Yehuda, Ematai. Oh, when do we say that a mother can walk the child like that? Bizman shunotel ahat umaniyah ahat. So long as he lifts one foot and puts down the other foot. Aval imaya gorer asur. But of course, if the child doesn't lift its feet up, and the mother, let's say, is carrying it by the under the arms, so then it's considered she's dragging the child. That would be considered carrying. Now, if you're in a public domain, that's forbidden. So when is it permissible to, let's say, carry the child, to put your hands under the child, help him walk, when he's actually walking himself? Meaning, he lifts his feet up so you can aid him. However, if he just keeps his feet stationary on the ground, you're just dragging him, that's obviously a suit in the public domain because you're actually carrying him. Dragging is like carrying, and you can't carry in the public domain. Now the Gemara will explain in detail these cases. Amar Rav Yehuda. First case. Amar Rav. Bema shenafla le'amat amayim. Let's say you have on Shabbat an animal that fell into a pond of water. Mevi karim uksatot. You're able to bring pillows, for example, and comforters. Umaniyach tachteha. You can actually place it under the animal in order that the animal can climb out. It's in the water, let's say. You put the pillows over there so the animal can step on it and walk out. Vimalta alta. And if it came out of the water, beautiful, came out. Metibe, what do you mean we have a question? Bema shenafla le'amatamayim. Same case. Animal fell into the pond of water. Osela panasa bimkoma b'shvil shelo tamut. You could feed it in the pond of water in order that it doesn't die. So the Gemara says, panasa in. Yeah. You could give it sustenance. Karim uksatot, no. But you're not allowed to put the pillows underneath. So make up your mind. The first statement said, put the pillows underneath. Second statement says, no, don't put any pillows underneath it. Just feed it. Gemara says, lakashya. It depends. If you're able to sustain it, don't put any pillows underneath. You just throw food at it. But if you can't, then you can try to get it out by propping the pillows underneath it. And the Gemara explains, if shar beparnasa in ve'ilo, that she says, for example, if the water is very deep, and therefore, let's say, there's a second half of the animal, you're not going to be able to feed it because the water is very deep, then already, mevi karim uksatot, umaniya tachteha. So then, you're able to put, let's say, the pillows in the water, in order so it can climb out. Comes the Gemara and says, wait. What do you mean? By the animal now, by you placing these pillows underneath the animal, you actually mevatel the keli. You took a non-mukse item, now you turned it into a base. Meaning, it's possible that this animal will just sit on the pillows for the rest of Shabbat. It's not like the chicken case that we said above on the basket that for sure just climbs up momentarily and goes off. Here, it's quite possible once you put it under him, he'll sit there for the whole Shabbat. And therefore, you took a non-mukseh and you potentially made it mukseh. Now, what's the isur there, gentlemen? What's the isur exactly? So that she says, by making an item mukseh on Shabbat, you now destroy that item. And it's similar to the melacha of soter. Just like on Shabbat, you're not to demolish an item. By causing a non-mukseh item to become mukseh, that's similar to the melacha of soter. So we go back to the Gemara. how is it possible to put these pillows underneath? Yemevatel kli mechano.
Gemara says, Savar mevatel kli mechano de Rabbanan.
That isur is only rabbinical.
Sa'ar ba'le chayim de oraita.
But to cause pain to an animal is the oraita. It's from the Torah. How do we know that? Because the pasuk says in the Torah, "Azov ta azov immo." If you have an animal that's laden with goods, Torah tells you you must help to unload it. Why? Because the animal is in pain. That's a Torah law. So now let's analyze the case. So you have an animal that's in the water. It's suffering, obviously. It needs to get out. So therefore, animal in suffering as deoraita. Putting the pillow underneath, at worst, it's only the Rabbanan.
Gemara says, Ve'ate deoraita, ve'dache
deRabbanan. The deoraita law of Tsar Bale Chaim pushes away the Isud Rabbanan of Mukse, of Mevate Kli, Ve'chano.
Comes Gemara and says,
Tanegolet Shebarcha. Okay, now we go and explain the Mishnah. Dochin in. We said it's permissible to push the chicken back into its coop or its pen. Now you can push it. Medadin lo. However, it's forbidden to actually, let's say, take the chicken by its wings and walk it in. Gemara is going to explain why. Because a chicken, when you hold it by its wings, has a tendency to fly up. So therefore, we know a chicken is mukseh. By holding it under the wings, what's going to happen? You're definitely going to come to carry mukseh. Now, even though it's in a private domain, but still mukseh is forbidden. So therefore, while you're allowed to push it, by pushing it, it's walking on its own. You're just pushing it from behind. But to medaded, to lift it by the wings, that's saying help it walk, you're going to come to handling mukseh. Why? Because as I said, the chicken flies up into the hands. Okay? Tanina lehada tanuna banan. We have a braita. Medadin behema chayava of behatzir. Good. In a courtyard, it'll be permissible to medaded, to move a chaya, an animal, the off, and even a type of off, a type of bird. Which means all other types of birds. Aval, lo et tanegolet, but not the tanegolet, not the hen. Which is the difference between other ofot and the tanegolet. Why? Tanegolet mai ta'ama lo. Amar Abaye, mishum de mekfiya nafsha. That she says because it elevates itself from the ground. Mashenken, if let's say you take a goose or a different type of off, that'll be permissible because it's not going to jump up. But a tanegolet is different. So let's get the rules again. In a chatzer, it is mutar, a regular animal, no problem, to hold it by the neck and walk it. Every type of off, also permissible. The only type of off that's forbidden is a tanegolet, a hen. Why? Because when you hold it by the wings, it jumps up. So what's the isur? You're in a private domain. The isur is mukseh. Because now you're going to be carrying mukseh. Now, Tani Fada, we have a braita. Medadin behema v'chaya v'of v'chatzir. It is permissible, again, to walk these animals in the private domain. Aval lo birshu tarabim. But not in the public domain. What's the problem in the public domain? So that she tells us as follows. We have an issue. We learned earlier in the Masechet that the opinion of the rabbis is that even though we say by human beings, Hay nose et atzmo, that a person carries his own weight, meaning if a person would, let's say, carry a human being in the public domain, it's only forbidden from the rabbis. Because why? Because we say a human being carries himself. However, the rabbis said animals do not carry themselves, even though they're alive. But animals don't carry themselves. So listen to what the Braita is concerned about. The rabbis are concerned like this. if we're going to let you walk these animals under the Shuta Rabim, what might happen? You might come to lift them. If you might come to lift them under the Shuta Rabim, it's going to be Isur de Oraita. Because this opinion says, we don't say Haino Seet Atzmo by animals. Oh, so why do they let you walk the animals in the private domain? Because, what are we worried? That he might come to lift it? Even if he comes to lift it, what's the Isur? Mukseh. Mukseh is only Drabanan. So we're not going to make a Gezerah that you might come to do a Drabanan. But by a hen, it's definite that you're going to do a Drabanan. Because the hen, definitely when you hold it under the wings, jumps up. So therefore, the case of animals in the Reshut Rabim, forbidden to walk them. Why? Because you might come to carry them. And so what? We're going according to the opinion that says we don't say Haino Seet Atzmo by animals. And therefore you can come to Isud De Oraita. Now, Va'isha Medadedad Banab Reshut Rabim. But a lady can walk her child in the public domain. Why? Because even if she carries him, it's only Isud de Rabbanan. Because we say, Haino Seet Atzmo. So therefore, we don't go there by a child in the Reshut Rabim. Ven tzarich lomar b'chatzer. It goes without saying, it'll be permissible for the walk the child in the chatzer. Betanya idach, we have a braita. En okrim behema behaya ba'of b'chatzer. You're not allowed to lift, okir. You cannot lift an animal in the courtyard. We understand that because obviously that would be mukseh. Aval dochin bahem shikansu. But the Braita says you can push them. Now the Gemara is going to ask, this Braita over here, its implications are contradictory. We're talking about animals in the private domain, in the Hatzir. You can't lift them. But what could you do? You could push them. So the Gemara says, Hagufakashya. Gufakashya means when you have a statement that its implications are contradictory. How is it contradictory? Amart, you said, En okrin. That you can't lift the animals. Aval, didivuye medadinam. But sounds like you can walk them. Which is, what's the implication? Lifting, no, but helping them walk. Permissible. Hadar amar, then you tell me dochin. Then you tell me you can only push them. Implying what? Dochin in midadin lo. But walking them, no. So make up your mind. The contradiction is again. You tell me what? You can't lift them. Oh, lift them, no. But what? Walk them, yeah. Then you tell me, but you can push them. Oh, push them, yeah, but walk them. No. Make up your mind. So Gemara says, amar abaye. Sefan atan letanegolet. This braita is talking about two cases. The first case that we said, you can't lift them, implying but you could walk them, is talking about animals, and for that matter, all other ofot. The end of the braita that said, you can only push, implying that you can't walk, that's talking about a hen. So therefore the braita has a resha and a seva. Let's just review quickly all these cases again. Comes out according to the Gemara. Behema, haya, ve'of, permissible to walk them in the chatzir. For that matter, only in the chatzir, but not in the Reshut Rabim. Why? Because you might come to lift them in the Reshut Rabim. And if you lift them in the Reshut Rabim, it's Yisud Deoraita, because we don't say, Chayno Seet Atzmo by animals. In the Hatzir, however, a hen, you can't even walk. Why? Because it's going to lift itself up. If it lifts itself up, you're definitely going to be carrying Mukseh. And therefore, it is going to be forbidden. So what do? You could push the hen back into its pen in the chatzir. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Abaye, Hai man deshahi tanegolet. Advice. A shochet. A slaughterer. He's coming to slaughter a chicken or a hen. Lichbeshinu lekar'e be'ara. Either make sure its claws or its feet are firmly placed in the ground. Iname, or option two, nidal lehu medal. Make sure its feet are suspended. Either put its feet firmly in the ground, or make sure their feet are in the air. Why? The dilma manach lehu letufre be'ara ve'akar lehu lesimanim. Because we're concerned that what? Which means, actually, Gemara is saying like this. The first option is bend its legs. That's the way that she learns. Meaning, don't let it stand on the ground. Cause its legs to bend so it's like sitting on its knees. Or lift it up. Why? Because if you're going to let it stand on the ground, we're worried that at the time the shohet is making shohita, it's going to move. And that's going to cause the simanim, meaning the signs of the hen, which is, let's say, the esophagus and the windpipe, which is the sign that you, when you make shechita, you have to slaughter them properly. If he's going to jump, so now already you're going to make the tanegolet not kasher. So we're giving you advice: if you're a shohet, either lift it up so it cannot move around, let's say its legs, or bend the legs down so it's resting on its knees in order that it cannot jump around. But do not let its legs touch the ground. Comes the Mishnah. It is forbidden on Yom Tov to help an animal give birth. That she learns the reason is because it's a great exertion. Tadha yetera. Aval mesa'adin. But you can help it. Gemara will explain what does it mean to help the animal give birth. Umyaledin et aisha b'shabbat. But a lady, a human being, of course it's permissible to help her give birth. Not only that, v'kurin hachama lemakom lemakom. You can even call a nurse from a far place, even though she's outside, let's say, of the boundaries of Shabbat, the nurse is allowed to come, the midwife, in order to help the lady give birth. And for that matter, you can even make Hilul Shabbat. Now the Gemara is going to explain that's superfluous. You just told me you can call the midwife from far away. What do you have to tell me? Shabbat? The Gemara will explain. You're also allowed to tie the belly button. And umbilical cord. Why? Because you don't want the inside, chas v'shalom, to fall out, as she says. Sekana for the baby. Rabbi Yosef omer, af chotchin. You can even cut the umbilical cord on Shabbat. V'chol sorche mila osim b'shabbat. And for that matter, all the preparations for, or the needs for circumcision, are permissible on Shabbat. Now the Gemara will explain. Kesad misa'adin. It says you're allowed to help an animal give birth on Yom Tov. How do you help it? Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Ochez et habalad shelo yipol la'aretz. You can catch the baby animal from the womb so it doesn't fall to the ground. Rabbi Nachman Amar, Dochek bebasar kedei sheyetzei habalad. You're actually allowed to push different parts of the meat of the animal in order to cause the baby to come out. So there's different spots on the animal, you know, that will cause the animal to come out, the baby, so you can push them. Tanya kevated Rav Yehuda, kesad mesa'adin, lochazin et habalad shelo yipol la'aretz. So the rabbi opinion that clearly says in a braita, you can catch the baby animal, and also it doesn't fall to the ground. And you can do some more things. Venopeyach lo bechotamo. You can blow into the nostrils of the baby animal in order to clear its membranes, or in case it's stuffed up with mucus, so you blow into the nose in order to clear it up. Furthermore, venoten lo dad letoch piv kedei sheyinak. You're allowed to take the mother's breast at the animal and put it into the baby animal's mouth in order that it can nurse. All this is permissible on Yom Tov. Amar Rashbag. Rashbag says, merachamin ayinu al behemat teura biyom tov. We would do things to endear the child to the mother animal on Yom Tov. Sometimes, for some reason, the mother animal abandons the child. So there's certain techniques in order to get the mother animal to endear the child. So the Rashbag said, on Yom Tov, we used to use these techniques. So the Gemara says, Hechi Abid, what are these techniques? What are they? Amar Abaye, Mevi Bul Shel Melach. You bring a fistful of salt, umaniyach la betuch harechem, and you stick it in the mother's womb. Now obviously that's going to be quite painful. Why? Kedesh tiskor sa'ara v'terachem alav. She'll remember the pain that she had in giving birth to this child. It'll remind of her labor, of her pain, and therefore she'll come to have mercy on the child. It seems that somebody that you had pain for, you love, because she gave of yourself. So you have to remind the mother of how much she gave for this child during childbirth. So how do you remind her? So you stick a fistful of salt over there, so she feels the pain again, so she remembers, oh! She remembers the pain that she had having this child, this baby animal, and therefore it endears her. Ingenious. Umizalfin meshilya al gabe valad. They take the placenta and they dip the placenta in water. Then they take from that water that had the placenta in it and they sprinkle it on the child, on the baby animal. Why? The smell of the mother's placenta on the child, it'll endear, it'll bring the mother animal close. Vedavka tehora, only a pure animal, a kosher animal. Aval teme'a lo, but not a teme'a animal. Why not? Maitama teme'a. The Gemara says, Maitama teme'a lo merahaka valda. Because a teme'a animal does not distance its child. It's not necessary. It doesn't happen. Oh. And if it does distance the child, it doesn't come back. And therefore, nothing's going to help. The behemat teme'ah is stubborn. Once already it makes up its mind, you can't change it. So this process is not going to help. We continue. We said it's permissible on Shabbat to help a lady, human being, give birth. Mechdi, let's analyze. We said you could help her give birth. You could call the nurse even outside of the boundaries of Shabbat. So what does the Mishnah have to say? You could transgress the Shabbat. You just told me you could do all these things. You could help her give birth, call the nurse. What does Mechalil the Shabbat come to teach me? To teach you what it says in the Braita. If let's say the lady that's giving birth wants a light on, her friend is allowed on Shabbat to light a ner, because it seems that that's also sekana, which means a lady that gives birth, she wants light, you have to give it to her. Let's say she needs oil, let's say to be anointed with. She can actually bring the oil. However, Hachamim say she shouldn't bring it in the normal way. She should bring the oil in the palm of her hand. Why? Because as long as she could do it in a shinui, instead of carrying it in the normal way in the public domain, it's not going to cost any more time. Just pour it in a hand and carry it in a different way. Let's say she needs more oil, more than can fit in the palm of her hand. So she could pour the oil in her hair and put all the oil in her hair. Now when she gets there, she'll squeeze it out to the pregnant lady. If it's not enough to have it in her hair, then already she could bring it in the normal way in a vessel. Now, Amar Mor, Gemara says, right? You just told me what? If she needs the ner, her friend can light the ner. Peshita. I mean, again, that's also pashut. Again, anything that's sakanat nefashot, that our life is going to be in danger, of course you're allowed to do it. But if you tell me that it's sakanat for a lady that just gave birth and she wants the light on, of course it goes without saying that you could turn on the light. You could light the flame. Gemara says, lo siricha besomeh. You know what the hadush is? We're talking about a pregnant lady that's giving birth that's blind. Mao de tema, you might have thought. Kevan de lo hazya asud. Anyway, she can't see. So therefore, what purpose is it if she says, I want the light on? You can say, what's the difference? She's blind anyway. Kamash ma'lan itube mitva darta. That, you put the light on. You know why? Because she becomes at ease. She becomes, she has peace of mind as a result. Why? Savra. She says, she thinks, iikamide hazya haverta ve'avdali. She says, at least now I know the lights are on, so others will be able to see things in order to help me. If she's in the dark, she's worried she's not going to get tended to. And that lack of peace of mind is dangerous. And therefore the chidush of the Braita is what? Even if a blind lady asks to have the light on Shabbat when she gave birth, you put it on. Because even though she's not going to benefit directly from the light, but indirectly from others, she will benefit. One more piece. If she needs oil, so what do we say? Let her bring it in her hand. She needs more, let her bring it even in her hair. So Gemara says, what do you mean? What are you going to help by bringing in the hair? Bottom line, when she gets to the house, anyway she's going to have to make an isu deoraita, meaning she's going to have to squeeze her hair out. And squeezing the hair out is asur. So what did you tell me? He said, we want you to do it in a rabbinical way if you can. It's not going to help. By putting it in her hair, it's going to end up being sechita. So Gemara says, Ravav Rav Yosef Mitarvayu, en sechita besear. We found the opinion that says there's no squeezing when it comes to hair, because the liquid doesn't get absorbed in the hair, it gets around the hair, and therefore there's no law of squeezing when it comes to hair. I can even tell you there is sechita b'se'ar. We didn't mean to pour the oil in our hair. We meant to pour the oil in a vessel and put the vessel in her hair. So she's carrying it in a different way. As much as you can make it in a different way, do it in a different way. Which means if she needs a lot of oil, we should put it in a keli. Fine. But we'd rather you not carry the keli in the normal fashion. So if you can attach it to your hair, it'll be better. Now, even if that's not an option, then of course you're carrying in a normal way in order to give it to the pregnant lady. To the lady that's giving birth.